Welcome to the Month End, a CPG community chat. The Month End will provide emerging CPG brands real-life knowledge into the accounting, finance, and operational worlds. Our guests will be key stakeholders from those same brands, as well as other key contributors to the industry, all of which have vast experiences and insights that will be shared with the audience. Welcome to the Month End, episode number 13. Today's chat is with Mark Levitt, who is the founder and CEO of Forecast Easy. This is a little bit different of a agenda and topic versus having an actual CPG founder. We're having somebody that's going to help us chat through the fun topic of forecasting and really what does that mean at a high level, how you know, emerging CPG brand founders can understand it, implement it, and really try to get the best ROI on implementing a forecast. So we're very excited for the conversation. How you doing today, Mark?
Brad, it's good to talk to you. I'm in a hotel room in Kansas City, so it's great to be traveling again and taking these calls and podcasts from a bedroom suite.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. So just a little background on Mark. Mark is a career consumer investment banker who's developed strategic and financial plans that have aided in transaction to the world's most admirable strategic acquirers, including Moët, Hennessy, Constellation Brands, Gallo, and Chanel. And then earlier this year in 2021, Mark has founded Forecast Easy, as I said, which is a cloud-based forecasting tool that mirrors the forecasting process used in these transactions, but it simplified it into a framework that can be completed by founders in a matter of hours versus days or weeks. So, which is exciting from a guy like me in dealing with accounting and finance for a lot of small businesses. As much as we can template and simplify the process, the better. So yeah, Mark, is there anything else you want to add about your background and maybe, you know, what you're doing within the Forecast Easy or CPG space? Kind of maybe a little more expand upon that.
Sure. Well, thanks, Brad. I think you gave me a promotion there with the CEO title as well. But
Perfect. Somebody's got to be the CEO. So
right, exactly. No, I think the CPG industry has always been exciting, but really in the last couple of years is showing unbelievable signs of innovation, and with new channels that allow founders and small teams to begin selling quickly and frankly profitably. You know, it's really exciting to bring new flavors and innovation out there. And my point of view, as you'd imagine, is I think is aligned with yours, is let's talk about a plan. Let's talk about a five-year vision for where we want our company to be one day. Because we you know, to control our steps today, we need to know where we're going. And you know, quantifying that can often be seen as scary and difficult to do, but there's actually some pretty easy ways to do so. So helpful for all founders to have a plan of action and to march toward that.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's get into it. So let's start at the high level. What is a forecast?
Fair enough. You know, a forecast, really, I'm not going to answer it the way you perhaps expected, but founders have in their heads really the plan of where they want to go and how they want to get there. And in their brains, they often know exactly what these steps are. A forecast is really taking that, putting it on piece of paper, a scratch pad, an Excel document, and really just trying to quantify what it means, you know, what the units look like, what the pricing, what the revenues, and from there, what type of organization can be built to support it.
So when we that makes 100% sense. Is there a specific, you know, we hear the words forecast, budget, model, like how do you differentiate those, or are they synonymous, or what do they specifically mean to somebody like you?
Yeah, no, they're very close, and they're definitely nuances. They're very similar. I'd say forecast, think of, you know, a 3, 5, 10-year plan. Where are we going? How are we getting there? What's going to bring us along the way? A little more strategic of how much money might this cost? Questions about where we get it from all stem through these forecasts. Budgets are a little more factual. You know, here is the next 12 months, what we expect to do. And we're starting to measure against that so that we can just see if we're doing exactly what we think we'd be doing. An analogy I often use, I think we've all been in our homes and we've watched a little too much HGTV. Forecasting is like, you know, blueprinting. Where are we going to put the house? How many rooms is it going to be? Is it going to be an open concept? How many bathrooms, et cetera? And budgeting is a little more of the tactical of when does the plumber get here? How about the electrician? How many hours is it going to take? What order should we do it? Both are important. Budgeting is more about how do I get to tomorrow and get the day-to-day done? We often call this, you know, the Maslow's hierarchy of needs of, you know, if you've got an issue with your production partner, you got to fix that before you do anything. So budgeting is often the first thing small consumer brands will look for. But forecasting, in my opinion, is where they should spend at least a couple hours every few months to figure out, is our plan still the right plan on a long-term basis?
I think that information was fantastic and how you broke out the difference between the two, because in my world and even like our team at Accountfully or our clients, it's budget versus forecast just gets thrown around in a synonymous manner. But I think, discussing or defining those mechanisms, I think really helps out. When you're saying forecast, are you forecasting, you know, what financials are you forecasting? Are you looking at the P&L, the revenues, expenses? Are you looking at the balance sheet, cash? Like, what's your highest priority when you're looking at a forecast?
That's a great question, and I hope to simplify this down for people, because balance sheets are really difficult. Cash flow statements are even more difficult. And to back up a second, the first thing I usually say is the only thing we know about forecasts are we're going to get them wrong. You know, but at least it helps to tell us the direction of if we go somewhere, what it may look like. So cash flow is just, it is so difficult. The balance sheet is so difficult. And what's good is that the most strategic statement is the income statement. And that's all about what are our products? What are our channels? What are our different margin profiles? And so if I'm the founder of a 5 million in revenue or under company, and probably a 10 million in under company, I would spend 95 to 100% of my time on the income statement. And from there, honestly, we can answer a lot of the most important questions that a balance sheet or a cash flow statement should say. If you're trying to project the exact month that your company may run out of money, the strategic implications are the same of you need to start raising money yesterday. And a lot of it, if we spend a lot of time and money and resources figuring out we're going to run out of money on September 15th or on October 12th, it's probably too late already. So income statement.
100% in agreement with you on that. All right. So at what phase of my business or what revenue, top line revenue, or like, when do I need to forecast?
Yeah, it's funny. I've talked to a few founders who say, oh, you know, let me just raise my round of financing first, and then I'll start to forecast. And, you know, I don't have a good response to this, otherwise it's other than it's sort of a chicken and the egg situation. But I think the way I've been thinking about this is, you know, if you're a founder, you've decided that you're going to create a business where you think the revenues and the dollars in are going to exceed the dollars out in almost all circumstances. And so you've already done that forecasting and it's in your head. It just may not be written down. So I'd say you're already doing it. You should be doing it, and that it should be done now. You know, whether you're day one, day zero, or day 1,000, now is the time to start. And you know, it's about turning your vision into numbers and seeing if it'll work out. And frankly, most of these plans don't work. And so you either got to figure out a way to get them to work, or, you know, I hope your company succeeds, but if it doesn't, and I've been told this a million times as well as an entrepreneur, much better to, you know, not succeed quickly and fail and try something new than to, you know, have a 10-year cash burn cycle. So, to repeat, income statement, and, you know, now.
Mm-hmm. In relation to kind of like, I guess one question is like, how far out, like how long, 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, like, is there a starting point? Like, is there specific milestones or specific tasks such as I need to raise my Series A, so I should have a 5 year forecast versus a 1 year? Can you kind of walk through that kind of mindset and decision-making process for the founders out there?
Yeah, it's a great question. I see 2 year forecasts, I see 10 year forecasts, and I'm going to give you what sounds like a very simple answer, but I promise you it's been distilled with a lot of thinking. 5 years is the right answer. 3 is too few, 10 is too many. Five is the right amount for, I'd say, 98% of businesses.
And when a prospective investor is looking at the forecast, what specific things are they looking at?
That's a great question. And it probably breaks down into what the investor profile is. It's a friend or family member, to be honest. They probably don't care that much. It's more about their relationship to you. If it's more of a angel, they probably want to see it go from a few dollars to many dollars. And if it's a strategic investor who understands the industry, that's where you're going to start to get into a lot more detail about gross margin profile, product mix, channel mix. And ultimately, that's the story they're going to want to hear of, okay, we're going from $1 million to $5 million in revenue. How do we get there? Well, we've got these three SKUs and they're going to account for 60% of the growth. And then we get into this new channel and that's going to be 20% of the growth. And so, you know, these more sophisticated investors are going to care about your product strategy and your channel strategy more than anything. They're going to say, you know, look, your operating expenses, yeah, okay, $500,000, that looks about right. We can either upgrade that or downgrade that depending how you go. But what's going to make this team and this brand different is where we're selling our product, what our products are, and give me as much detail about that as possible. Because that's what the magic is that an entrepreneur brings to this. So I'm all about, and I think Brad, we share this, it's products and channels in as much detail as you possibly can give me, but not too much, so that we can really strategically talk about why our brand is unique in the industry.
Good. And then the last kind of high level question here, how often do I need to review the forecast after I've implemented and or reassess and change it?
Right. And great question. And this is more of a personality fit question, I'd say. You know, you could do it once at the beginning of the year and really just see how it's, you know, skating toward that. Most founders I know aren't like this. And they're actually, you know, every few days, every week, they're taking in new information about who likes their product, how much it's selling, you know, and what numbers may change from this. I would not update your forecast weekly. I would say don't do it. Less than quarterly, that's probably about the right amount for most people. You know, you lock it in December, and then you update it March, June, September sort of thing. With that said, I might add an extra one or two in if you get a big retailer or there's a new kind of interesting tweak to your business. We're talking about a 5-year plan here. And, you know, if Costco hits in June versus December, you know, that's going to affect your day-to-day and your cash, but in terms of the overall vision, hey, we're in Costco in 2021 and that's what matters.
Awesome. Great information so far. Love it. All right. Now into the next steps, building out a forecast. All forecasts, all Excel spreadsheets, all calculations, all models that are created need to have some key drivers, key inputs. So what would you consider the key inputs or drivers of the overall kind of forecast?
Yeah, great question. And to step backward too, if you're doing any forecasting, that's a great start. So, you know, the most basic way to do this is you look at your sales last year and you apply a percentage growth rate. And if you're doing that, you know, it's step one and that's great. And that's great. And that's fine. To go on the exact opposite side of that, sometimes for 3 million in revenue brands, I'll see week by week breakdowns of velocity builds by channel, by product. And it's, you know, what I would call a Ferrari of a forecast. That's probably 100 different tabs all feeding into something. You know, for 3 million in revenue company where you're really trying to double, triple the business in the next 2 or 3 years, you're not going to have that good of data. You're not going to have that good of insights. Your time is much better spent selling, marketing, product development, et cetera. So I think there's a really happy medium and it's about your products and your channels. And I would really focus, less is more in this case to begin, on channels that you have a different price point in. So if I'm a food brand and I'm selling online from my website, I'm going to get a certain dollars received from selling on that website. If I sell on Amazon, it's a very different price point that I receive as the brand. It might be the same to the consumer, but Amazon pays me or I receive from Amazon a different amount. Which is different if I go to a farmer's market and different if I sell into UNFI and so on. So I would find each channel where you have a different price point, and I would kind of set them up as the top of a grid. And then I would list out each of your product lines or SKUs, you know, on the other side of the grid. And you sort of create a matrix of here are all my products and here are all my channels. From a channel standpoint, Brad, I'd say 3 to 5 is really the sweet spot to concentrate on. And from a SKU standpoint, I would say, you know, some brands have 3 SKUs and that's it, and that's perfect. Others, I work with a lot of wineries, they'll have 50 different SKUs. That's way too many. You know, I'd say 5 to 12 is really the sweet spot of get, you know, 75 to 90% of your overall sales in those 5 to 12 SKUs. And then add a final SKU that says all other, and that's probably going to take care of it. So that's the setup I typically do. It's detailed. It allows you to talk about your business from a very strategic standpoint. But it's not all that complicated for founders to speak to, because more than anything, they know their products and they know their channels.
That's great. So when you're setting that up, what you're saying is having like expected sales quantities each month entered into those cells, right?
Yeah, exactly. So within that grid breakdown, I'd concentrate on 3 things. It's volume, it's price, and it's cost.
Awesome.
And because of this, you know, we know our volumes hopefully go up each year, and they'll go up at different rates for different products and at different rates in each channel. And our price, like we might want to build in a price increase 2 years from now, 5 years from now, and see what it does to the overall gross margin. And the same thing from the COGS point of view, which is we might have $100 worth of COGS now. You know, what do we need to get that $100 per unit down to so that we can get our 52% margin or whatever we're looking for? And this type of forecast isn't going to tell you, hey, we're going to lower the bottle cost by this and the liquid cost by that, but it'll say, Brad, I need you to talk with your suppliers. I don't know what you can do, but get from 100 to 72 any way you can. So save us that $28.
Awesome. Awesome. So basically we take the products, the sales channels, and then we look at the volume, price, and COGS or cost of each within those specific products and sales channels where they meet. Then exactly. From there, once we're able to kind of go and calculate that, then what is the key kind of metrics or the key information we should be looking at, you know, after we calculate all that information?
And that's exactly where we're going. The most important number on an income statement, a forecast for me for looking to invest in brands, looking to cash flow, looking to be acquired one day is gross margin. And if we can break this gross margin down as detailed as we can, so we understand what channels and what products are our most profitable, that's where the founders can have really strong power of where we want to push the extra effort here. You know, I work with a lot of beverage alcohol companies and they're starting to sell online, but they're shipping, you know, 2 or 3 bottles at a time to a customer, and they have to subsidize the shipping. So they might get $100 of revenue, but it costs $50 for the vodka, let's say, and another $50 to ship it. And we're actually break even or losing money. And so focusing on gross margin per channel or per product in these channels talks about the brand's health and lifeblood and where we want to allocate resources.
Nice, nice. I've always clearly, I think gross profit, gross margin percentage, you know, like looking at that number and is a super key, especially a lot of our clients in the, you know, startup kind of CPG space with, especially those in the distribution world where you're getting slotting fees and free fills at the start, it's really hard to look at, but it's really, if you're focusing on that and then you're identifying a target percentage, and then that helps you, you know, calculate volume, price, and COGS, right? And really back into that aspect. From an aspect of like, you know, target gross margins, you know, for a $0 to $5 million company, or do you segment it even further, like 0 to 2 million, 2 to 5, or 5 to 10? How do you, like, clearly it varies by, you know, sales channel, by industry, but like kind of how do you think through that process from your back kind of background in the kind of investment space?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's a lot of categories in CPG, but believe it or not, they all kind of, I mean, you know this, they fall out in a similar space. Most brands starting up, you know, if they're selling through wholesale, are going to be in the high 20s, 30s, low 40s, somewhere in that range. That's difficult to run a full business on a 30% gross margin company. Just to back into this, we typically think of SG&A at maturity being about 25% of net sales, and marketing, depends on the channel, being between 5 and 20%. So if we take the midpoint and we say, okay, you've got 30 to 40% of your net revenue as cost, you know, our gross margin's got to be above that if we're going to ever make any money. So the numbers that kind of come out are, you don't need to be at 50% today in some of those wholesale channels, but a path to get to the high 40s, low 50s is going to be really important. Online tends to be, you know, right away in the mid 50s to 60s. That's good. That's great. We can keep them there and kind of boost them to the 65 to 75% range. That's going to help to fund other aspects of the business. But the online component, what's going to be really interesting, and we see it more and more by the day, Brad, is if you are a light good that can ship very cheaply, you can have some amazing margins on those online channels. If you are a heavy goods company or a regulated goods company, I mean, half of the beverage alcohol clients I work with are losing money on every bottle they sell online.
That's so interesting to look at the specifics of sometimes people just, you know, luck into success. And it's like, oh, I just, my product weighed very little, you know, and you don't, like, those are the things to think of the world we're getting in with e-com and shipping, like shipping costs, freight costs, what 3PL provider, where should my products be? Clearly, like the Amazon world where we live at now, it's super hard to be a small business and absorb high shipping costs, which is what you're saying, which is a lot. A lot of people sometimes don't focus on all of that.
It's a good time to be a spice company.
Yes. Good stuff. So basically, kind of we back up here. The key drivers we want to look at are segmenting by your product, your SKU listing, and if it's too big or a extensive list, you know, group them by your major SKUs that you sell and or kind of I guess product groupings if you're able to do that. Sales channels, look at segmenting sales channels based upon the price point or sale price that you're selling, and then the three to five kind of range is a good target. And then within there, then you kind of extrapolate volume to be sold, the price you're selling at, and the cost of the product you're selling at. So once you're able to kind of get those inputs, then you're able to kind of create a full forecast, a full P&L model that shows you gross margin percentage, gross profit, top line revenue, et cetera, the amount of money that can help absorb those SG&A costs. And kind of, you know, what you were saying about target gross margins, you know, getting towards that 50 or above that percent at the wholesale level, this is the whole point of forecasting, right? You don't need to be there today, but you need to tell the story of how you're going to get there. That story's the most important for you as the business owner to help make decisions, as well as identify key relationships from suppliers or negotiation tactics or whatever you want to do as you move from, you know, year one, year two, year three, year four. But also it's very key when you're raising money to show the prospective investors, hey, I've thought this through. This is what my goal is to get there. And hopefully I can, you know, follow that process. Clearly it won't happen exactly, probably. But I've thought it through. And as we move forward, I have good data that I can always, you know, be agile and make different decisions. Is that kind of thought process, does that make sense from your perspective?
That's 100% correct. And to give an example with it as well is if we've got a 20% gross margin product right now, you know, that's okay if we've got the path to get to 40, 45, 50%. But if I show you a five-year plan and my 20% gross margin gets to 26% in our rosiest scenario, we got to be done with that. Something's got to change. Raise the price, lower the cost, or just get out of that business completely. Because, you know, when you add in the cost below that to sell that, you're losing money, everything you sell.
Yes. In terms of, you know, looking at gross margin dollars and kind of gross, you know, margin percentages here, is there specifics like on the side of grow my business, selling my business within the, you know, CPG kind of, you know, alcoholic industry, product-based industry, is there specific kind of metrics or valuation tactics based upon gross margin, like that you can start thinking of how much your brand's worth from a valuation perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'd say that there's a lot of nuance in industry within CPG on those metrics that we can dig into some specifics. Typically, we'll see net revenue multiples as the easiest way to populate valuations, but you're exactly right. These are often deducted from gross profit numbers because a multiple, and just to back up, a multiple is sort of a valuation metric you're gonna put on one of your company's financial metrics to turn into what your company might be worth at this point in time. There's a high end of the range and a low end of the range. And that's very much determined by two things. One is your gross margin. You know, are you providing a product that's higher in gross margin, more profitable than the company you're selling to? If so, it's called being accretive to their overall gross profit margin. And companies will very much appreciate that because you're helping their overall financial picture, even if you're very small. The second metric with multiples is velocity. How much are you selling in each point of distribution? And so if you've got a high velocity and a high gross margin, you're going to be on the high end of the multiples. If either of those is low, you know, you're going to be in the middle and the low end. So when we think about, you know, you often hear 2 to 4 times for a lot of food and beverage companies as to what a net sales multiple may be. Well, high volume, high velocity, high margin, that's going to be on the 4+ side. Sometimes you see 5s and 8s and 10s, and what those are almost, you know, category creators, where they've just taken the category by storm. They're growing at a velocity we haven't seen before, and really high margin. So the bad answer is kind of 2 to 10 times net revenue. We can deduct into the gross profit multiples from that, but really determined from what the overall profitability of this company is from a product standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Love it. The key terms so far: product, sales channels, volume, price, COGS, gross margin, velocity.
We can add a glossary at the end of this.
Exactly. Thank you. Awesome. 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 All right. Well, I think, that was a very good kind of in-depth detailed conversation on building out a forecast, what we should focus on and kind of what the outputs are, or the focused outputs are, the priority outputs, right? Kind of moving forward now. So for the folks listening in here, I don't have a model, or maybe I do have a forecast in place. So kind of as we move forward to action items for our listeners out there, what are, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 do's that they should start focusing on right now?
Yeah, I hope this doesn't sound a little tongue in cheek here, but do forecast. I don't care if it's a cocktail napkin or a highly complex financial model or anything in between. Simply writing down on a piece of paper, you know, here's what's in my head and here's what it turns into with numbers. It's going to help you so much. I mean, it's plan, measure twice, cut once sort of things. And I really hope that getting this long-term plan helps you to figure out the best places to play in your industry, where, how to get there. And if what you're building is something that's worth building in that direction. So do forecast is my multiple answer to the your how many do's question.
All right. And then what is a don't? What should a CPG founder not worry about or not focus on?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think it's don't be intimidated. I mean, I know we've talked about a lot of terms on here, and all the founders I know are their salespeople, their marketing people, or their product people. Not one of them is a finance or accounting person that's, you know, gotten into the CPG industry as a founder of a brand. So sometimes people like numbers or get numbers, and other times they want to run away from them as quickly as possible. But the most effective founders I know, they're not finance experts, but they know how the numbers work with their overall vision. So I encourage you to, you know, work with the folks on your team or your outsourced advisors to really understand how your sales and marketing and product development build ties into the numbers. And then there's tools and resources out there. I know we spoke of, you know, you've got all your channels and your margins and your products, and that's a really big spreadsheet. There are tools out there to help you with this, to, you know, really break it down into a granular fashion where it's quick, it's easy, and, you know, the numbers are pretty close to right. So we can help you find those solutions, but don't be intimidated. You don't need to know finance to be able to develop, you know, your P&L down to gross margin. It's just answering questions over and over again. What are our volumes? What are our prices? What are our COGS?
It's great. So again, do forecasts and don't be intimidated. And just so, you know, kind of just resources that can help the audience out here. You know, as we discussed earlier, Mark's the founder of Forecast Easy, a great forecasting kind of tool for a startup or somebody without any finance or accounting background. Go check it out. Even if you don't use it, he's got great content and just information to follow that can help you kind of think through this process. Additionally, there's a ton of great accountants, finance people, support people in the world that can help you with this. So I think that goes along with the don't be intimidated aspect. One final question before we go. What is the longest or the most complex? So longest in time frame, most complex. You don't need to be specific here. Just give us a ballpark range of or forecast you've ever seen from any company.
That's a great question. And I'll tell you, it's not detailed at all, but a couple of the acquirers that you mentioned at the beginning of the call, their legacy brands, legacy houses, and what they talk a lot about is, we're not doing this for 5 years or 10 years. We've got a 100-year vision. So that's what they're looking at. It's a little tongue in cheek, and they're not telling me, you know, what the sales are going to look like in 2073. But I love the concept, which is, you know, if you're building a brand that you want to last for generations, thinking through what decisions you can make now to support a brand in 2073, the, you know, pillars of foundation would be, you know, it's never too early to start looking 100 years out.
Yeah. I love it, man. It's interesting looking at 100 years out when your lifespan isn't expected to be that. But this has been great information. I think from here, you know, Mark, really appreciate the time. Super tangible information, next steps, action items, you know, tangible drivers, inputs, et cetera. Like, I think this is very worthwhile for the audience. And I'd imagine some audience folks that listen in will probably listen to this a couple times as they're taking notes. So again, Mark Levitt from Forecast Easy. Thank you so much, Mark. And really appreciate the insight. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Brad. Talk soon.